psychological matters.
Professor Renata Schoeman is my guest, Head of Healthcare Leadership at Stellenbosch Business School. Professor Renata Schoeman, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really appreciate your time.
Good evening, Aubrey. Good evening, listeners.
I was saying just now that we probably haven't really counted the costs of COVID-19 and that two-year moment where we had lockdowns on our minds, on our psychological health. And one of those things, I imagine, Professor Renata Schoeman, is the issue of quiet quitting. What is this?
So quiet quitting originally really was a positive concept, which was created to remind people that you need to have boundaries, that you need to have work-life balance. And it was supposed to mean that I know when to switch off. I know when to go offline, to switch off for the day, etc. Unfortunately, the concept has become a bit distorted, where people now see it as, I will do the minimum at work, just enough not to be fired, because in the name of having a good work-life balance. And the problem with that is that the real problems might be missed, because people return to work and they forget the good things that they've done during lockdown, like to take care of themselves, to exercise, to switch off the emails. Although some of us started to work longer hours because there was flexibility, we could take time off in the day maybe to exercise. Now they return to work and all the good habits went down the drain. They don't take care of their mental health, and now they start developing symptoms of so-called burnout, which is an occupational phenomenon. And in order to preserve then what they think their mental health, they start to do less and less. But it actually can be a symptom of disengagement and a symptom of burnout. And if it's not picked up, someone that needs actually help and professional support might just gradually become less and less productive, also can gradually develop depression, and in the end that it's someone that's lost to the organization, and it also has a negative impact on the organization.
Is this something that somebody does deliberately? In other words, is this something that somebody wakes up to and says, you know, I'm going to go to work and I'm just going to do the bare minimum? Or is this something that is set on by other not so apparent psychological reasons?
Now, I think if we talk about quiet quitting, the terminology of quiet quitting, that is a deliberate decision. But what forced people to get to that decision depends. It can really just be laziness. It can really be bad work ethics. But it can also be someone that actually developed burnout. And there's various causes of burnout, which we can also discuss. And if it's burnout, then it is something that is not necessarily deliberate, because people gradually develop the symptoms of burnout, which is a precursor of depression. And causes for burnout is a constant mismatch between resources and demand. So whether you don't have enough time for what you need to do, whether you don't have enough knowledge and support, whether it's financial support that you don't have to work, you need to make something happen with very limited resources. But it might also be a mismatch between values, between your values and the organization's values. And it might also be a symptom of a toxic work environment, where leadership can play a role in people developing burnout, people are overworked, they're not supported, or where they just having a toxic work environment. So the problem is, it looks the same on the surface. People with burnout that's disengaged, and quiet quitting can look the same. But the underlying cause for it is different. The underlying decision and driving factors is different. But the results can both be detrimental to organization and individual. If you have burnout, if it's not being treated, as I mentioned, you can develop depression or other disorders, and that is a huge toll on yourself. But in terms of quiet quitting, it has a negative impact on your team. If you never are the person that's prepared to do a little bit more than what you just have to do the bare minimum, because then that load is falling on someone else. No one wants to work with a colleague that's always seemed to take shortcuts or do the least possible and never is prepared to raise their hand and say, but I will. It's also impairing your own growth, because if you don't step up sometimes, you will be overlooked in terms of training opportunities,
right,
in terms of promotion opportunities. And also, if you live in yourself, I only do the bare minimum, what happens to self-worth? What happens to the feeling of, I value my work? Because that in the end is something that gives us meaning, to know that I get up to work, to go to work, I have a meaningful contribution at work. Doesn't matter what I do, I make a difference for my organization, for my colleagues, for my co-workers, but also for my family, for what I can take home at the end of the month.
Does the COVID moment, the lockdown period of 2 years and a bit, can there be a direct causal link to the ever-growing phenomenon of quiet quitting between that moment and quiet quitting itself?
I don't think COVID is the main cause of it. I do think there is an amplification of movements that we've seen even before COVID. And it's something that's come over time, where, especially with the newer generations, people are more prone to look for jobs where they do have some personal choice. They look for work that they really find meaningful. They look for flexibility. Then when COVID came, the world was forced to come to a halt, and many people used the time to reflect and revalue their lives and where they are. And we saw that different work models is in fact possible. Working from home, hybrid working, flexibility, it is possible. It's possible to actually have a better work-life balance. And that first led to the Great Resignation. And now the next movement that gained traction is quiet quitting. But quiet quitting already is there for the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So it was actually starting before COVID.
Right.
But I think COVID just highlighted for all of us the importance of mental well-being, and organizations also. I think that's maybe the one good thing from COVID, is definitely the conversation about mental health,
mm-hmm,
and corporate mental health awareness definitely came to the fore with COVID.
Somebody's saying, oh, quiet quitting looks like the main culture of the South African productivity reality, but I suppose it's...
I had a discussion earlier today when you asked me to be on this show tonight, and I was actually thinking, you know, when we look at a big part of South Africa's workforce, unfortunately, there's not much to quit.
Give us a call, 011-883-0702. Are you feeling like you are going down the quiet quitting route? Can you pinpoint what the reasons of it may be? Is this a symptom of burnout? Prof, just tell me what burnout is.
So burnout, I read an article earlier today which erroneously say it's a medical condition. Now, burnout was recognized by the World Health Organization in May 2019 as an occupational phenomenon.
Yeah.
So it's not a medical disorder. You can't actually be medically diagnosed with burnout. Burnout is a consequence of what I mentioned before, the lack of meaning, value mismatch, or resource imbalances, which then cause people to develop certain symptoms. The one is disengagement. So it can look like quiet quitting, where you actually don't feel attached to your work anymore, you're not proud of it anymore. You also depersonalize. You lose that closeness with your colleagues. You don't want to mingle anymore. People irritate you. Customers irritate you. You will throw the phone if it rings once more. But also, you're working harder and harder, but you're actually producing less and less. So you're not working smarter. So we then see people working longer hours, but their work productivity decline. But then there can also be behavioral changes. People can become more irritable. They can start to use substances. Their sleeping is disturbed. Their appetite is disturbed. So it can present them with those manifestations.
Yeah.
But it can also then lead to real mental health disorders, depression, anxiety, and so forth. So burnout for us is a precursor, or the first alarm sign that there's actually something else going on. And by the time someone presents to a doctor or a mental health care professional with, doctor, I think I have burnout, it's usually already depression.
Is there a possibility of collective burnout? Can groups of people or nations find themselves in the condition of burnout?
That's difficult. By definition, no. But if you allude to what I can't get the quick English terminology now, but in Afrikaans we would say face force. You know, where you're just being hit and hit and hit and hit. And I think that's where we are currently, maybe in South Africa a little bit. You know, it's day zero with water. It's load shedding and darkness. It is socioeconomic difficulties. It's political upheavals. It's corruption. It is unemployment. I think as a nation, we might be a little bit faceless, but it won't fulfill the definition of burnout. However, if you look at collective group of people, we know that during the pandemic, for example, healthcare professionals, the rise of burnout in them was tremendous. It was just complete work overload, lack of support, social isolation, because doctors couldn't go home and socialize with the freaks. So they were excessively long hours working. And when I talk about doctors, I talk about all medical staff, you know, the ER staff, the support personnel, etc. You worked excessively long hours, and yet you couldn't return and get a hug from a friend or a family member. You were isolated because of the prerequisites and the conditions of the pandemic. So as a group of people, we definitely saw that amongst healthcare professionals during the period of COVID.
Is it then possible to have collective quiet quitting?
Unfortunately, yes. And that, I almost want to go so far and say in inverted commas, it's infectious. Because it's driven by social media. And it's driven by things like TikTok and Facebook that it's actually fashionable to quietly quit. And you should do it. You should put down and follow this quiet quitting movement, which is actually really missing the point. The point and the purpose originally of quiet quitting was to be having healthy boundaries, to do my best at work, but not to the detriment of my mental health, to know when to switch off, to know when to say, I work no more, I go home now, this is my personal time, but there is periods where I can be expected reasonably to work longer hours or overtime, whatever the case might be. But to have healthy boundaries, to say, I will not be married to my technology, I will not answer and write emails in the middle of the night, or while I'm actually sitting with my little boy reading a storybook or having supper with my family. It's about that healthy boundaries. It's about taking care of yourself, sleeping enough, eating, exercising. Now, that was the purpose of quiet quitting, and it's about being assertive in a healthy way. It's having boundaries in a healthy way. It never says give up your work ethics. And the problem is where I do think quiet quitting can be the result, as I mentioned, not our leadership style as well. If you feel unvalued, that is one of the main reasons why people then feel, oh, you know what, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
No one notices. I don't care. And it's not always something that must come from leadership. It can be something that we as employees and colleagues and teams are responsible for. Because how many times do you give your peer at work recognition and say, thank you, I really appreciate it? Or how many times do you just put a cup of coffee down for someone without them asking for you? When do you make a cup of coffee for your receptionist? You know, just acknowledging someone else as a human being, as a colleague, that actually is part of your team and make a difference. Just that little bit of human value that we give people, that is enough to inspire someone again and to say, whatever I do at work, it's actually making a difference. And I think that's one of the reasons, maybe one of the biggest reasons, why people quietly quit, they confuse having healthy boundaries with quiet quitting. And number two, I don't feel valued.
It sounds to me, Prof, that we are facing an existential crisis here. I mean, it doesn't sound to me like a fad, something that is going to go away as just a little phase. It sounds to me like a deeply entrenched existential crisis from the individual level to the collective level, that something is fundamentally changing in the way that we understand the world and ourselves and our role in the world as human beings. It sounds like an existential crisis.
I don't know how much is an existential crisis and how much is just full circle in a way. If it's part of, we just want to live simpler again. There's many people which will give up higher jobs or higher paid professions and jobs to have better quality time or have the flexibility. They will scale down. They will go and live in a smaller town and rather earn less but have a good lifestyle. So I think it's a natural cycle all over the world. I don't think it's necessarily what you say, existential crisis.
Yeah.
What I do think where it becomes definitely a crisis, maybe not existential, is what we see now, the impact of social media. If you go back in history, and if you look at the original concept, how quiet quitting was intended to be, we all know people that did it 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and we might even have admired them for having such a healthy, balanced life. And the ability to say no. But unfortunately, technology means we're always online. And unfortunately, things do run away on social media, as per the original TikTok quiet quitting videos a couple of months ago. It just suddenly gets traction. And then people, unfortunately, also use it for their own personal intent and their own personal agendas, so that the original meaning and the original drive behind it actually then get lost.
Give us a call on 011-883-0702. Do you recognize these symptoms that the professor has just outlined for us in your personal life? But look at the society in which you operate, in which you live, in which you work. And do you see some of these symptoms in the collective that you are a part of? And may I perhaps even ask you, do you think that this is an existential crisis? Or perhaps societies, humanity coming full circle to desiring a simpler, more meaningful form of life? Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you on 011-883-0702. What are the implications of quiet quitting in its negative sense? Because, Prof, I'm getting the sense that, you know, quiet quitting is not a bad thing in and of itself. What we should be concerned about are the motivations for it and perhaps whether or not we are in control of it. Dr. Skuman?
I agree. The one thing, I think where it goes wrong from straight from the beginning, I think quiet quitting is the wrong word choice, because quitting has always been a negative word. It means you give up.
Yeah.
Quitting almost means you walk away. You give up. There's nothing positive that I could find, even in the dictionary, about quitting.
Yeah.
The only place
unless you quit a relationship. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Or quit a substance.
Right.
Like, that's the only thing that's positive.
Yeah.
But you know, quiet quitting is, I almost would say, the wrong terminology for what we're trying to do. We actually, instead of quiet quitting, we should maybe rather think of assertive boundaries or something, because that's what it's about. It's actually being strong in the way that you draw boundaries for yourself, what you're prepared to do, what you're not prepared to do, boundaries between work and play. So for me, the first problem is the quitting. The other thing that I was just talking or thinking about while you mentioned to the listeners, what about what is the bigger implications? If we think that unemployment is a massive, massive problem in South Africa, we need to help organizations have a better turnover so that they can create more jobs. So if I'm in a team and I do the bare minimum, the productivity of the team goes down, the potential turnover for the company is down, the revenue, so I can't, as an employer, create another position. So, A, it means that my employees must go on, continue working under-resourced or whatever, because the productivity level is not there, because two or three of them are quiet quitters.
Yeah.
So the other people have to work harder, and the whole team becomes demoralized. But in effect, if we're all actually do everything that's required for us and is prepared to stand up and say, here I am, without doing ourselves in, without neglecting our mental and physical health, but just say, you know, I don't mind doing that, I will do that. You actually create a better environment for your teammates, you support them, you all can achieve more, the company can dream better and we can appoint one or two people more, which then reduce the workload on you. But also, it's two more people out there in the community that doesn't have work that now might be employed just because you decided I will not do the bare minimum.
I want to take a call. Ntebeng is in Roodepoort. Hi, Ntebeng. Hi, Ntebeng, are you there?
Aubrey, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you so much, Ntebeng. What are your thoughts?
Aubrey, quiet quitting is a myth. You know, it's a social trend, and I believe that, you know, employees, oh, by the way, I am in the HR space.
Yeah.
And, you know, employees have this myth that you will quiet quit. You do the bare minimum. At the same time, you know, you demand more from the business. And come increased times and bonus times, you demand those high bonuses and increases.
Yeah.
While you are on a go slow, because that's what quiet quitting is, you know, can we get as a society the idea that we need to do what we have to do so that we can ensure at the end we get what we want to get from our own companies? If my company is not giving me what I need, why do I need to go on a quiet quitting adventure or whatever it is?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But as an HR practitioner and Ntebeng, do you find sometimes that people engage in quiet quitting for reasons other than laziness or playing truancy of some level, but because they are motivated by reasons that have that are no longer in their control? Do you find that sometimes?
I do. And this is where now I concur with the doctor to say that, you know, companies as well need to do their bit, right?
Yeah.
You can see and tell when an employee is going down that slow pretty slide and nothing is done, and we name them. And, you know, even if we do have wellness programs, they go through the programs and nothing is changing, and we really don't do anything further to try and help the situation. But employees need to also realize that they do also have a responsibility. If an environment is not serving you and it is making you sick, why do you keep staying in the same environment without trying to find alternatives? Because I do find and see a lot of employees, they will sit there and they will keep on complaining. And, you know, I will say to them as well, but have you tried to find alternative employment and anything else? And they'll be like, no. Why? Because this particular job is closer to my home. And it's like, so you are willing to stay in this environment that is making you sick and you are not happy in, just only because it's closer to your work. We have responsibilities both ways, employers and employees. And, you know, quiet quitting, that bonus is not going to come. And you are, what are you going to do? You have been quiet quitting.
Ntebeng, I hear you.
Been depressed.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your call. I hear you. And Ntebeng, thanks very much for your call. Dr. Schoeman, I hear Ntebeng, but I'm interested to hear your comment around the, you know, once somebody is almost suicidal, stays in a toxic work environment, stays in it, even though conventional intelligence says, look, man, you're dying here. There's no pleasure for you here. There's no meaning for you here. Isn't it a major psychological red flag that this person is staying there, even though they are finding themselves in a toxic environment? And can it be just pure economics, the scarcity of jobs, and all of those kinds of things?
Yeah, I think we must be careful here, because if we talk about suicidality, by implication, we talk about someone that has a major depressive episode.
Yeah.
And that should be treated. And treatment is holistic. It means we look at medicine, we look at therapy to give the person skills to go better, and we look at addressing the stresses, and we look at lifestyle changes. And maybe that's where the work environment comes in, then, addressing the stresses. If the work is the main cause of stress that eventually led to the depression or contributed to the depression. Depression is usually not one specific cause. But then, yes, either the environment needs to be addressed. So either the therapist or occupational therapist and the employee must discuss with HR and the employer what can change at work to make it more bearable, or the person needs to leave the job if it is a complete mismatch and if they hate what they do, etc.
Yeah.
Because you must remember that two people can be in the same position, in the same company. The one might love it and the one might hate it. So there is the personal factors that come into play.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, with our current socioeconomic environment, it's not really so easy as to say, okay, but then quit or find something else. We all know that it is not that easy.
Yeah.
So I just worried that we are looking at various different conditions. We look at maybe toxic workplace environment. We look at depression. We look at burnout. We look at poor work ethics. And we try to put everything under the umbrella term quiet quitting.
Yeah.
Instead of actually looking, taking a look at if someone engages in quiet quitting, to look at what it really is and what is the underlying cause and what needs to change.
Is it not possible for the underlying causes to be layered and multiple?
For sure. For sure. Because there's still people that even in the midst of depression, the one thing that they treasure most is their work, because that's the one thing that keeps. So for some people, even with a major depressive episode, they will still work hard, even if it's difficult for them, because they feel, okay, at least I'm still can make a meaningful contribution there. So, once again, we can't generalize. We need to look at individual factors as well. But what I do think is important, maybe the message behind this discussion, is for A, individuals, employees, to really look at, do I take care of myself? Do I have healthy boundaries? Do I take care? Because if I take care of myself in terms of exercise, sleeping, socializing, spirituality, all of those things, my energy tank will be full. I will be able to make a meaningful contribution at work, and I won't feel the need to quietly quit. Secondly, the message for the employer is, what can I as an organization do to discourage or prevent people engaging in quiet quitting if it is because of the workplace environment? Remember, there's individual factors and the workplace factors. And maybe, for me, the lesson is, as an employer, I need to make sure that my employees feel valued. I need to make sure that I create a culture where we encourage people to have a healthy work-life balance. And that doesn't mean 50-50, and it doesn't mean speak office hours. It might mean that I do request people to work overtime from time to time. It might request that times of the year it is busy, but that I value people's contribution and that I give them due recognition. And also that I am an employer that has empathy with individual circumstances, and that I am an employer that is approachable, that can actually listen to people and take their suggestions and their concerns to heart to create a workplace where people don't feel the need to quietly quit.
I imagine that employers would also need to know that having those virtues is also a strategic business imperative, Dr. Schoeman. Because I imagine that there may be businesses or people that run corporations listening to this conversation and saying, there they go again, being all mishy-washy and lovey-dovey and all soft here, when we've got productivity to reach, we need to deal with the bottom line. How do employers get to see what you're talking about as a very important business imperative?
Okay. So that is what the nice part is, because as I am working at the Stellenbosch Business School, I'm also coming from a business lens. So I understand the bottom lines, I understand the stakeholders and all of those things. We need to make money. That's what organizations are there for, unfortunately.
Yep.
Well, fortunately as well, because otherwise we can't have any progress.
Right.
Now, a similar term to quiet quitting is presenteeism. Now, presenteeism has a slightly different flavor. It means people that is at work, even though they have a mental illness, for example, burnout or depression or whatever, they're at work. They're not absent, but they're not fully productive because of the symptoms that they have, and they do not get the necessary support. Now, there's a very, very interesting study by the London School of Political and Economical Sciences that was conducted, and it determined that the cost of presenteeism in South Africa adds up to $40 billion per year. Now, you can make the calculations. That is bigger than the tourism industry in South Africa, and it is bigger than the sum total of all the social grants in South Africa. So that means if I as an organization or employer do not look after the mental well-being or the corporate culture in my organization, it costs in money a massive amount. Now, that is an argument that employers want to hear. That's the argument that the financial director wants to hear.
Yeah,
we need to put finances in.
Your call has been placed on hold.
Wurgert.
Please wait.
What's happening? Is Professor Renato Schoeman still there? Prof, are you still there? It looks like we've been placed on hold. Do you want to take a quick break? Prof, are you there?
Yes.
There you go. We just had a message. This is your call has been placed on hold. Listen to this comment from Karabo Kanare. Says, I think COVID exposed many of us to an alternative lifestyle and flexibility in how we work. Perhaps this may have contributed to this phenomenon when we went back to work post-COVID regulations. Could there be truth in that, Prof?
I definitely think so.
I'm here.
Oh, sorry. It definitely plays a role. As I mentioned earlier in the conversation, I think when we were forced to work from home, people realized that it is possible to have better work-life balance, but also realized that it is possible to work more on their own terms, that you have flexibility in how you structure your day. And I think people also had the opportunity to bond again with their significant others, for example, and realize that, I actually want to spend more time with my family. My children do better if I have supper with them and I'm not late every evening. So I definitely think it was a big drive where we all in this past 2 years were forced to do some reflection on what we want, and I definitely think that contributed.
Phil is in Waterkloof. Hi, Brafil.
Hi, good evening, my brother. How are you?
Very good, thanks, Brafil. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
You know, it is practically impossible to achieve what is called work-life balance. I'm a doctor in wellness, wellness.
Mm.
You know, you work-life harmony, work-life integration, especially with what has happened with the 2008 global
financial crisis.
Yes, and the pandemic and the post pandemic. We need to integrate, because when you go to work, you carry a work hat in following your work path. When you go back home, you carry the home hat in pursuing the work and very various social species. So I'm saying that the employers must accept and that there can't be a balance. It's a seesaw. You can't have an even thing. They must accept that employees come into the workplace with the burden of the home. They go to the home with the burden of the workplace. But they must accommodate the two. That is what I wanted to accept.
Phil in Waterkloof. Prof, is the idea of work-life balance perhaps a misnomer, a fantasy of sorts? That's what the call from Brafil says.
I don't agree. I think where there's a misunderstanding is that people think it's 50-50. It's not 50-50. Work-life balance means I work hard, but I make sure that I also refueling my energy appropriately. It doesn't mean I'm like 8 hours at work, 8 hours having time for myself, but it means that I do pay attention every day to make sure that I sleep enough, I eat healthy, I refrain from substances, I keep my brain agile, I make sure that I connect with significant others, whether it's once a week with a friend or every evening an hour with your child, whatever the case might be, and it's making time to be mindful, reflective, and spiritual. That might only take 1 hour today, because there's only one hour for that.
Yep.
But maybe Saturday or Sunday I might have more of it. And no one exact balance look the same. So one person might need a bit more sleep. For one person, exercise is a bit more important than maybe spending time at church. For someone, it might be the other way around.
Mm.
But it means that I take care of myself and I refuel me in a way that builds my energy so that I can face the challenges that I need to face tomorrow. It's completely possible. And yes, we all have stresses at home. We all have stresses at work. We all have different careers. We might have stresses on the way to work. Some of us have to commute, some not, whatever the case might be. But yes, it plays a role. You can't just switch off when you go to work. But you also have a responsibility towards your family and towards your colleagues that what happens in the one doesn't negatively impact, or you don't. If you're angry at your husband, you can't now be angry at your colleague. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay. So obviously you will be angry, but you can't take it out on someone else.
Absolutely.
And the opposite way around. If someone is rude with you at work, you can't go home and kick the dog. That's not on.
Yeah.
So there is, yes, it affects us, but we also need to remain professional in that way. So I don't think work-life balance is impossible. I think there's people that do it brilliantly. And if you read books like, there's a brilliant book by Rosen called Grounded, which is interviews with the CEOs of the top countries in the world. And all of them work incredibly hard, but all of them mentioned how they are able to maintain work-life balance in whichever way it is. So it's a matter of what is your definition of work-life balance, what is important to you. For someone, it might just be able to, for 30 minutes over break, you know, over lunch, be able to knit a scarf or whatever, you know, energize you. But I think it's possible. You just need to do that instead of, for example, waste time on social media and follow TikTok videos on quiet quitting.
Professor Renata Skuman, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you. How do people continue this conversation with you outside of this particular framework?
They are welcome to read my blog. I have a website, renataskuman.co.za, where I every month blog something that is relevant to your mental health, whether it's time management, whether it's juggling the balls as a mother, with a career, whatever the case might be. Also on LinkedIn, I publish articles every month, and I also share good readings there, and also on Twitter. Everywhere, I'm just Renata Skuman, so you should be able to find me fairly easily.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Renata Skuman is professor at the Stellenbosch Business School and head of healthcare and leadership there. What a great conversation.